Okay. So we're gonna start. So we're holding outside Gimel Amud Aleph. We're holding about the beginning of the wide line, so let's recap. We're actually in the middle of a discussion. We started like this. We said in Mishnah that you have a din that if blood of a chatas lands on clothing, then the Torah tells us that you have a mitzvah to wash it off inside the Azara. I should use them in Yom HaBeged, if it's blood sprinkled on clothing, I should use the Aleh, the one that is sprinkled on, to Chabas, Markham Kaddish, has to be washed in the holy place, meaning in the Azara. So Gami Rachama asked the question, what happens if it landed after Chista? What happened if the blood landed on a piece of clothing that was tummy? So as it lands on the piece of clothing, it becomes tummy. So now the question is, that blood is possible. The question is, the Mishnah told us that blood is possible.
Yeah, I don't hear you very, very well. Still a little faint.
Okay, I'll talk closer to the phone. This is about the best I can do. So the question is then, the Mishnah told us that blood that's possible, you don't have to do this kibbutz, you don't have to do this washing in the Azara. The question is, does that apply only if it became possible before it landed on the clothing or whatever? Or are we talking about that even it became possible at the moment it landed on the clothing? And Rav Huna Breger Bishur had explained that that was the point of Rami Bachama's question, that even though this blood had shakta kosher, there was a period of time when it was okay to sprinkle on the mizbeach. The question is it that the moment it becomes possible simultaneously with landing on the clothing, therefore, does that mean that you don't have to wash it, or is it only if it had become tameh or otherwise possible before it landed on the clothing? So Rav Chista answers him that it's actually machloikas Rav Elazar and Rabbanan, the way that Rabba explained it and the way that Abaya clarified the situation. So I guess let's start from the third to last line of the narrow line on Sadik Gimel Amud Aleph, the Tanya. So the Tanya, we learn the Braita, Rav Elazar Omer, Mei Chatas Shenitmu, Pura Duma water that became tummy, not Tumas Nes, but it became Tumay some other way, let's say, Matarin, nevertheless, is able to be Matar a person from Tumas Nes. And how do we know that? He says, Tare Nida Mazin Aleha, because you see, for example, that if you have a woman who is a Nida, so she's Tumay, obviously, and yet the din is that you can sprinkle Paradroma water on her, she's still going to be Tumay from Nida. Doesn't matter. The fact is, at least this way, she'll be Tumay from Tumas Nes. Well, actually, Rashi says, to be exact, what will happen is once she's done with the two sprinklings on the third and the seventh day, then when she goes to the mikveh, for which you have to do after being sprinkled with paradroma water, then it'll also be the tevila that she needs after her nidah. But the point is that the paradroma water, even though when it lands on her, it becomes tame, or not even when it lands on her, really, as we're going to say in a second, even when it's about to land on her, it's already becoming tame, and yet it's Matahar. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar says, you see from that, that Paraduma water, which is Tameh, is still able to be used. Incidentally, by the way, Rishonim point out, I think that Ramban points out in a similar vein, that you have, for example, you know, last week's parasha, we had the mitzvah of Tevilas Kalim. We had over there about the Kalim that they captured from Midian, and they have to be kashered, and they have to be tovled. The Ramban wants to say by the same logic, therefore, you could tovel them before you kasher them. Same way as over here, we're saying that the nidah can be sprinkled with paradroma water even before she's tahar from nidah. Not everybody agrees to that, and a number of the other Rishonim say that no, they're in the case of Kalim from Goyim, it's different, because the Torah specifically says the order that first you have to kasher them and then you have to tovel them. All right, anyway, that's just a side thing. The point is, going back to the Gemara, the Omer Rabbah, so Rabbah explains what's the point of the Machloikas of Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim. Rabbi Elazar, the Shittas, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Omra. Rabbi Elazar over here is following the same line of thinking as his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, the Omer HaVoras Kliya, Galim Makam Tomei Kmunachyam. He says that if you pass a Keli over a place which is Tomei, then it's considered as if it actually landed in that Tomei place. But by the same logic, in other words, Rebbe Lazer is using the same logic to say, even though this paradrama water, not just when it lands on the nida's skin does it become tamei, but even when it's about to land, when it's in the air over her, it already became tamei because it's going to end up landing over there. And nevertheless, Rebbe Lazer argues that it's metahar her. So we see, therefore, says Rabbi, that Rebbe Lazer, who's saying that this water is able to be metahar, is following the same logic as Rebbe Akiva, who says in a different context that something becomes tamei from passing over something that's tamei.
With that logic, she wouldn't even have to receive the sprinkling on her body.
No. It definitely has to land on her body. If it doesn't land on her, then she's not tahor from tumas nes. But what we're saying is, there's no question when it touches her, it's going to become tamei tumas nida. But what we're arguing is that Rebbe Lazer would say, as Rebbe Akiva says, that even before it lands on her, it's already tamei tumas nida. When is it going to be metahor from tumas nes? Only when it actually lands on her skin.
Okay.
So therefore, you see that it can be tamei before being metahar from tumas nes. So just now, namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Tara, haya oimid chutz latamer, if a person is standing on the other side of an oven. So the scenario is you have a person standing next to him is an oven, and on the far side of the oven is a window. In that window, there's a bottle of paradrama water. So he's standing next to the oven, but he has to reach over the oven to get the bottle. So haya oimid chutz latanur, so if he's standing outside, meaning on the other side of an oven, the sheres latanur, and there is a dead sheres in the oven, which makes the oven tamei. The hoshit yodeh l'chalon, so then the person reaches over the oven and reaches into the window, well, not a little login, and he takes the bottle of paradrama water, they have zero yapitaner, and he passes it over, he brings it back towards himself, passing it over this tamei oven. Rabbi Akiva metamei v'chachamim metahre. Rabbi Akiva says that bottle of paradrama water is tamei, and the chachamim say it's tamei. Now, what's the point? The point is that overhaul pligi. The machloikis depends on the following point. And on the following consideration, the Rabbi Akiva Sava Kemunach Dami, Rabbi Akiva holds that something that's passing through the air over something is the equivalent of it landing on that something. So therefore, effectively, what you have over here is when you took this bottle of paradrama water and passed it over the tamei oven, it's considered as if it actually landed in the oven. And if it landed in the oven, obviously it became tamei because the whole inside of the oven is tamei from the sheres. So the Rebbe Akiva therefore says that it'll be tamei. The Chachamim Matar and the Chacham say it'll be tahor because it didn't actually land in the oven. And the tumor of the sheres itself doesn't go out of the oven. It's not as if it was a mess in there, be a whole different ball game because a mess, the tumor of it extends up and down in as far as you can go unless it's under an oihel. But here we're not talking about a piece of a mess. Here we're talking a piece of a sheres. So the tumor is contained within the oven. But the point is, therefore, Rabbah says, what we're dealing with over here is the reason why Rebbe Lazer is saying that, in other words, Rebbe Lazer is saying, if it was just a matter of the water becoming tamei as it landed on the nida, then you couldn't really prove from it for a case where they became tamei ahead of time. Because there you would say there's a difference between them becoming tamei ahead of time versus them becoming tamei at the same moment they land on her. But because Rebbe Lazer holds, like Rebbe Akiva, that they become tamei while they're in the air because they're going to land on her, the same way as Rebbe Akiva says that this bottle of paradrama water becomes tamei because it went over an oven that contained a sheres, a tamei oven, therefore we see that Rebbe Lazer would say it doesn't matter, therefore, whether in this case, therefore, we see that it became tamei ahead of time, the paradrama water. Nevertheless, you're able to use it to sprinkle. Nevertheless, it's able to be metahar nida. Therefore, we see, says Rebbe Lazer, that there's no difference between whether it became tamei before or not. And that would be following Rebbe Akiva's logic about the bottle. Now,
that's just specific to... It's just... Maybe that is just specific to the paraduma. Maybe it doesn't apply to others.
Well, we at this point, we don't have a reason to think that that should be the case. And besides, Rabbalaz's din is also in connection with Paradrama. Rabbalaz's din is in connection with sprinkling Paradrama water. Rabbi Akiva's din is in connection with a bottle of Paradrama water that's yet to be sprinkled. So they're both dealing with the same area of halacha. But, yeah, at the moment, we don't at the moment, we're assuming, and this is what Rav Chista is saying, that the same principle that applies there would apply over here to Dam Chatzon. Later on, we'll revisit that and see whether that's the case. But right now, this is where we're at. So now, we're not done with that part. We're not done with the Paradrama analysis yet, because the Eis Ve'Abaya, because when Rabba said this, then Abaya asked a question on him. Namely, the Abraisa says in that connection, Murder Rabbi Akiva Bahazara, Rabbi Akiva agrees when it comes to the actual sprinkled water, Shehavira Agabe Tlicheres Tomei, that if that water passes over a Tlicheres, which is Tomei, Rabbi Akiva is saying that a bottle of Mechatas that was passed over a Tomei oven becomes Tomei. But Rabbi Akiva agrees with the Chachamim that if it's the actual water itself that you're sprinkling, you're sprinkling on something which is tamei, and the water goes over a kli cheres which is tamei, or a gabe mishkav a moshe of tamei, or if it goes over a bed or other kind of sitting or lying thing or whatever, that was tamei from a zav. So you have a zav is matamei the bed that he lies on, or the chair that he sits on, or whatever, anything, as we've learned in many places before, that anything that's normally meant for sitting or lying on or whatever, a zav is matamei by sitting on it, by lying on it, by leaning on it, what have you. So if the water passes over such a thing, shehi tahor, Rabbi Akiva agrees that it's tahor. Because the only thing that's metameh going upward and going downward, in other words, extending as far up as could possibly be, or as far down as could possibly be, the only things that are metameh like that, only a kizayis of a dead body, or any other kind of, or any other piece of a dead body that's metameh, that's metameh ba'ohel, ushar kol amahilin, and other kinds of tumas that to which Tumas Oihel applies, and the Gemara interjects La'isuriyeh Evan Hamanugas, that comes to include also the case of a stone from a house that had Saras. The rule is that stones from a house that had Saras, where the Torah tells us those stones have to be taken out, and then you put in new stones, and you replaster, etc., those stones are metameh, a person who touches them, or a person who carries them, and they're also metame with Tumas oil, not exactly the same way as a mess. There's a bit of a difference in how their Tumas oil functions, but the point is they are metame things that they are metame things that are above them or things that are below them. So therefore, the Braisa clearly says that Rabbi Akiva himself would make a distinction between a bottle of Paradrama water versus a drop of Paradrama water that's flying through the air. The bottle, he'll say, is tamei if it's going over the oven. But the drop that's flying through the air, he won't say is metamei unless it actually passed over something that would literally make it that would actually make it tamei like a mess. So you can't say therefore that Rabbi Lazar holds. You can't say therefore that Rabbi Lazar, who's saying that the water is tamei before it touches the nida while it's still over her, that he's following Rabbi Akiva's tzavara, because Rabbi Akiva himself holds that the water doesn't become tamei that way.
It only becomes tamei if it's in a bottle, you're saying.
If it's in the bottle, and the reason, well, we're going to get to in a minute why that is, but basically, I mean, the idea is the Torah tells us Paradrama water has to be put b'makom tahor, in a tahor place. So Rabbi Akiva understands, since Rabbi Akiva holds that something going through the air is as if it landed, that means, therefore, if you took this bottle of Paradrama water and passed it over an oven, which is tamei, since Rabbi Akiva is holding, in the case of the bottle, that's considered as if it landed, then effectively it landed in a makom tamei. It landed in a place which is tamei. It's as if it landed inside the oven. Therefore, it's tamei. But you have no such rule when it comes to drops of Paradrama water flying through the air. Those doesn't say that they have to be b'makom tahor. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva doesn't hold that they have to be. That they're going to become tamei. So the point is, therefore, Abaya says, so you can't say that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Lazar agree, because Rabbi Lazar seems to be talking, according to you, Rabbi, seems to be talking about a case where the drops became tamei in the air as a result of being over the nida. And Rabbi Akiva himself would hold up the drop stone to come promenade in that case.
Where does it say that Rabbi Akiva holds this way? That in
a Braisa, we just quoted a Braisa says that. That Rabbi Akiva would say it's one thing with a bottle, it's another thing. Murdered Rabbi Akiva by a few lines earlier. Murdered Rabbi Akiva by Hazal Shavira of the Akri Cheres Tomei. So Rabbi Akiva himself does make that distinction. Elo Amar Abayas. Abayas says, okay, so never mind Rabbi's explanation. We need a new explanation of the Machloikas of Rabbi Lozer and the Chachamim. And once we have that new explanation, not necessarily is it going to apply, therefore, to our case of Dam Chathas, the case that Rami Bacham asked about. So Elo Amar Abayas. No, Abayas says, we're going to say that it does have a certain connection. So we'll see. No. In the Machloikas of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim regarding the bottle of Haradrim water, the reason for their Machloikas has nothing to do with the Machloikas of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim about the Mei Chatos with the Niga. Remember we have three cases. There's Dam Chatos, which was the case that Rami Bacham asked about. There is Mei Chatos about to land on a Niga, which is what Rav Chista mentioned should be similar to that. It should be the same Machloikas. And we have the Machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim regarding the bottle. So Abaye is saying that third scenario, Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim's example about the bottle, has nothing to do with the other two cases. The other two cases we can still relate to each other, and we will. But the case of the bottle, Abaye says, has nothing to do with it. Because the Kula Amalav Kamunach Zami, Abaye says, no, both Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim are going to agree that something passing through the air is not considered as if it landed. So therefore, the fact that this bottle of Torah Duma water is passing over a Tomei oven is neither here nor there. It's not going to become Tomei as a result of that. Rather, the Machloikas between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim is on the following point. Rabbi Akiva Sava Gazrinan Shema Yanuach. Rabbi Akiva holds, fine. Minatora, fine, it'll be okay. But the problem is, you're reaching over and you're picking up this bottle and you're passing it over the oven. What if you do put it down on the oven as you're passing it? What if you don't bring it directly back to you? What if you put it down in between? Then it'll become tummy. So therefore he holds as a gzera that will consider the bottle tummy, even if you didn't actually put it down, because you might put it down, because then people might not realize, and they might think even if you put it down, it's still tar, and of course in that case it's not. It's 100% tummy. Whereas when it comes to the hazah, it's not going to land over there. You're throwing it, you're sprinkling from one place to another, and it happens to pass over the scaly or whatever. There's no zeta shema yanuach, because it's not, and if it lands on that thing in between anyway, it's not going to land on the thing that you're sprinkling at, then you're just going to need to sprinkle again anyway. So there's no zeta shema yanuach, there's no concern that it might land on the first thing, and then from there go and land on the second thing, because it's not going to, and if it did, that wouldn't work anyway. So there's no reason to make such a zera in the case of drops. So therefore, says Abaya, there's nothing to do, therefore, with the machlokas of Rabbi Lazar and with the machlokas of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim about the drops of Mechah.
The difference being,
again, Rabbi Akiva is saying, with a bottle where you're holding it in your hand and you could conceivably put it down in between and then pick it back up, we need to make a zera to make sure that you don't do that. So therefore, he's going to make a zera that even if you didn't actually put it down, but you might end up putting it down and not realize that would be a problem. With Hazah, which is flying through the air, you don't have the option to do that anyway. It's flying through the air. It's not going to land on the thing. And if it does, it's anyway not going to be able to be used afterwards for Hazah, because once water of Torah, once the drops land on one thing, then they can only be Mitahar that thing. They can't be Mitahar something else. So therefore, there's no reason to make a Gzer, he says. So therefore, what Rabbi Lazar said, so therefore, Abaye said, what you, Rabbi, said in explanation of the Machloitis of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim, in the case of the drops, that you explained that Rabbi Lazar is saying that the drops become Tameh as they're passing over the nida, but nevertheless they can be matahar, whereas the Chachamim disagree with that premise, that has nothing to do with the machlokas of Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, because Rabbi Akiva is not talking about drops. Rabbi Akiva agrees that drops that pass over something don't become tomei. Only a bottle becomes tomei, and not even midaraisa, but only because of a gzeira d'rabban.
So midrashah, they both agree. There's no, it's only midrabanan, but there's a
difference. That's what we're saying. According to Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, the question is, okay, so then we do have to ask in that case. So okay, so Rabba thought to make a connection between the two machloikas, between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim about the drop, and between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim about the bottle. But now that Abaya established that there's nothing to do between one and the other, then we have to ask, okay, so what is the premise of the machloikas between Rabbi Lazar and the Rabbanan? Rabbi Abaya, the machlokes between them would be, do we learn a case of something that was tomei before from a case of something that becomes tomei at that moment, or not? Mar Saba Donin or Mar Saba Ein Donin? Namely like this. Never mind the explanation. We thought to say that Rabbi Lazar is holding the drops became tummy in the air. Never mind that. We're going to assume that Rabbi Lazar agrees that with Rabbi Akiva that the drops don't actually become tummy until they actually land on the nidah. But in that case, Rabbi Lazar is saying like this. Fine. So in the case we just sprinkle on a nidah, what happens? The same time when it lands on her and becomes tummy is the same time when it's going to be metaher her. Now Rabbi Lazar argues, look, you chachamim have to agree that in that case it's metaher her, no? So in that case, Rabbi Lazar says, by this, I'm going to draw an analogy from that. That, by the same logic, if it became tummy before it landed on her, same thing. He would argue, in other words, so to put it in the words of the Gemara, dunin tumak duma. Do we derive a case of something that was tumah earlier, mituma shaba'oisa shah, from a tumah that happens only at that moment? Come this with me, that's the machloek. Mar Saba Danin, Rabbi Lazar is going to hold, yes, we can derive that. If we say that the parah aduma water works even though at the moment it lands on her, it becomes tumah, then by analogy, the same thing would apply, even if it became tumah at some point before it landed on her. And never mind becoming tumah in the air. Rabbi is saying, never mind, Rabbi Lazar is not going to hold that it becomes tumah in the air. Well, let's say it became tumah before from some other thing. It touched the sheriff or what happened. Rabbi Lazar is going to hold, since we see that it's metaher when it becomes tumah simultaneously with landing on her, then by the same logic, it should be metaher even if it became tumah at some point before it landed on her. Omar Sabra ain't done, and where the Chachamim disagree with that. The Chachamim say, fine, we'll agree with you, Rabbi Lazar, that you can sprinkle part of Adruma water on a nidah, because then the tumah and the effectiveness of it come at the same time, but we're not going to agree with you that from that you can deduce for the case where it became tumah an hour earlier, let's say, and now you want to sprinkle it on her. We don't agree that's a valid analogy. So now applying that to the case of the Dam Chassas, so what do you have? It's the same idea then. Rami Bachama asked the question, if the blood lands on a Beged Tomei, where you have the same kind of scenario, where it becomes Tomei at the same moment it lands on the cloth, because the same moment it lands, and the Beged now is Tohen Kibbutz, is the same moment when the blood becomes Tomei from touching the Beged. So now our Mishnah, remember, had said that blood that's possible, you don't have to do kibbutz. So Rabbi Lazar would hold that therefore it doesn't matter whether it became possible earlier and then landed on the clothing, or whether it became possible simultaneously with landing on the clothing. Either way, Rabbi Lazar is going to say that it's considered dam possible, and therefore that you don't have to do kibbutz with it. And the Chachamim are going to disagree with that. The Chachamim are going to say, no, when does the Mishnah say that you don't have to wash dam posel, dam tome, whatever, would only be if it became tome ahead of time and later on it landed on the clothing. Not if it became tome as it landed on the clothing. So that's what we meant when Rav Chista said near the top of the Amud, when he said that this question of yours, Rami Bachama, is the same as the Machloikas of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim, the way Rabbi explained it and the way Abaya clarified it, that's what we mean. That now that Abaya clarified that Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim are arguing on exactly that point, which is there a similarity between a tumor that happened beforehand versus a tumor that happens right now at the same time that something else is happening?
the Chachamim, they say there's no need for kibush.
No, so therefore what we'll say is Rabbi Lazar will say either way, Rabbi Lazar will say there's no need for kibush because just like there wouldn't need to be kibush if the blood had first become fossil and later on landed on the clothing. So far everybody agrees to that. Although we'll see soon Rabbi Kiva disagrees, but whatever. So far, in terms of our Mishnah, everybody agrees with that. The same way as with the Parah Adumah water, that if it became fossil and later on was sprinkled on her, then that's the thing. So okay, let me rephrase that. If the blood became fossil and later on landed on the clothing, everybody would agree that it doesn't need kibbutz. Everybody would say it doesn't need kibbutz. Yeah. If it became tumah as it landed on the clothing, so that's the thing. The Chachamim would say it needs kibbutz, and Rabbi Lazar would say it doesn't. The same way in reverse as we have with the Parah Adumah water, where Rabbi Lazar will say that since when the water lands on her, it becomes tumah. Therefore, we see that even if it becomes tumah ahead of time, it's also okay. And the Chachamim disagree and say there's a difference between those two. So they would say the same thing, there's a difference between the two cases of dam chasel. In the one case where it became possible ahead of time, you wouldn't need to wash it. And in the other case where it became possible as it landed, you would need to. So yeah, I was right before in saying, so yeah, if it became possible ahead of time before it ever landed on the beged, then yeah, definitely you wouldn't need kibbutz. The machloikas is if it became tummy as it landed, namely where the beged was tummy, which is exactly the Rami Bachava's question. So that's what we mean. Rashi asks the point, by the way, why are we even mentioning what Rabba said? If Abaya disproved what Rabba said and gave a different explanation, why don't we just say it's like the machloikas of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim, the way Abaya explained it? Why bring in Rabba? And Rashi says the reason is because Abaya was Rabba's Talmud. So he's not really arguing with Rabba. What it is he questioned Rabba's explanation, and he gave a different explanation, and Rabba himself, and he didn't say to you, Rabbi, you're wrong, and I have a different explanation. He asks the question, and then offers a different explanation, and Rabba accepted that explanation. So therefore, now we can call it that we still need to mention Rabba, in other words, because now it's Rabba's explanation, but how did Rabba come to this explanation? Through the fact that Abaya asked and answered on his explanation. That's why we're still mentioning Rabba. Okay, so the point is therefore, that's what we mean, that's what Rav Chisda meant when he answered Rami Bachama to say, your question is the same as the Machloket of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim. However, Rava says, no, Dekula Alma Ein Donin, not necessarily. You could explain that the Machloket of Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim also has nothing to do with the case of the Dam Tzatzas. You could argue that when it comes to the Parah Adumah water, the Mechatas, everybody agrees that Ein Donin, everybody would agree there's a difference between Mechatas that became Tomei earlier versus Mechatas that become Tomei right now as they're landing on the thing. So therefore we can say that everybody would agree that it's possible if it became Tomei ahead of time. Rather, the machlokes we could say between Rabbi Lazar and the Chachamim, we could say as follows: De Rabbi Lazar Sava Hazar Tzricha Shir. Rabbi Lazar, we will say, holds that there has to be a minimum amount for Hazar, which is a topic that we've taken up before. We learned back in Perek Kol Hazvachim, we had a short discussion over there about this point: whether does Hazar Tzricha Shir? We know for sure. We know that the keli that contains the Parah Adumah water, there has to be a minimum amount of water in it. We're going to discuss that point later, actually. But the question is, the amount that lands on the person that's tummy, or the keli that's tummy, is there some minimum amount that has to land on there? Or is it enough if even one molecule landed over there? So Rabbi Lazar is going to hold that it does require a shear. There is a minimum amount that has to land on the person. But he holds, which styles him la hazah. He says, therefore, if you had one hazah, If you had one hazard that wasn't enough, then you have another one, then another one can come and complete the shear. So therefore, in other words, what he'll say is like, Rebbe Loza is going to say that, so you do the first hazard on her, the first little drop lands on her. Now you can say that can't yet be matata her, because there's not enough of an amount in it. And it becomes, and he's going to argue, let's say, fine, it does become tummy. But then when you do a second drop, which now makes enough of a sheer hazah, so now the original one, even though it's tummy, is, you could sort of say, choy de veneer, it like wakes up again and combines with the second one. So therefore, Rebbe Elazar is going to say, so you see from that, that so therefore, Rebbe Elazar is going to say, it's not a question of can we derive a case where it was tummy before from a case where it becomes tummy now. In this case, the first drop already became tummy by the time the second drop comes. So it is a case where it was tummy ahead of time. And yet we see it can combine with the second drop. Therefore, Rebbe Elazar is going to say that there's no difference between whether the whole thing became tummy ahead of time, or whether half of it became tummy ahead of time and the other half of it did not. Either way, given the hazard to hashir, you need a minimum amount anyway. Without that first drop, you're not going to have the minimum amount. You're not going to have the necessary amount on her to make her tar from Tumas Nes. And that original drop already became tummy when it landed on her, and it wasn't matar yet, and it wasn't matar her yet because it wasn't big enough. So therefore, Rebbe Elazar says, Therefore, we see from that that the water can be tummy before it's ever matahar, and there's no problem with that.
One second. Okay. If, according to Rabbi Elazar, there is a shear, the question of the timing still is in essence standing, or there's no question of timing when there
no
is
question.
A shear?
There no is question. No question.
If now that we're saying that it's not a question of timing, but it's a question of shear.
So what he's saying, what we're saying now is because there's a matter of shear, therefore there's also a matter of timing. In other words, what he would say is like this. When you sprinkle on her, he's going to argue like this. The first drop that lands on her is not enough to be matar of her. You need a second drop, a second drop to land on her. So therefore, he's going to say as follows. From when that first drop landed until the second drop landed, some period of time passes. It could be a fraction of a second. But whatever, the point is, when the first one landed on her, it was not yet matar of her because there wasn't a shear. Afterwards, a half a second later, the second one lands on her. Afterwards, a half a second later, the second one lands on her. Now you have, between the two drops, there's enough of a shear. But how are you making up that shear? You're making up that shear. It now consists half of water that was tummy, and half of that was tummy before, a half that became tummy a half a second ago, and another half of water that only just became tummy right now. Therefore, Rebbe Elazar is going to say, since we see that you're able to combine the two of them, so we see that there's no difference between whether it became tummy a half a second ago or an hour ago. But because you have the matter of shear, therefore he says we can deduce from that there's no difference as far as timing.
Right. So that implies that if you have enough of a shear in one sprinkling, then there's no timing issue.
Right. Well, then actually, Rebbe Elazar might say, well, once we see that it works, even if it was two separate drops that landed on her, where the first one became tummy, and then later on it combines with the second one. Well, then how much more so if it landed on her all at one time enough to be matar her? How much more so he would say that it's matar her because then it didn't even become tummy, but then it didn't even become tummy before.
Yeah, but you could still I understand, but you could still say that not part of the drop touches her, but part of the drop, which is connected to the other part, does not touch.
Well, no, because, I mean, the whole drop together, if one part of it touches her, the whole drop is, if it's all connected together, it's all going to become tummy. The same way as, for example, if a tummy person touches a piece of food, the whole piece of food becomes tummy. You don't say only the side that they touch becomes tummy.
Okay, so if there is a shear and there is no other issue then, There's no timing issue.
Right. But Rebbe Lazar is saying, but even if it landed as separate drops and you need the drops together to be mitzvah for a shear, he says it still works. And therefore, he says, you see from that, that even though one of them became Tomei, later on, it's going to be mitzvah with the other one.
Okay.
The Rabbanan, on the other hand, hold Hazah doesn't even require a shear. So therefore, the Rabbanan would say, the moment the first molecule of water landed on her, then that's it. Hazah took place. So the Chachamim would say, fine. So we agree that when it becomes Tomei, the moment it lands on her, then it's no problem. But you want to argue that it can become Tomei and later on be Mitzahar? No, because we don't hold that it happened that way. We hold that it happened the moment it landed on her, regardless what the shear was, even if it was only one molecule, it was Mitzahar her at that moment. So fine, you can say from that that if it became Tomei and landed on her at the same moment, then it's Mitzahar. You can't derive from that, they say, about the case where it previously became Tomei and now landed on her. So therefore, now using Rava's explanation, it comes out, therefore, the machloikas of Rebbe Lazar and the Chachamim isn't really connected that much to the machloikas to the question of Romi Bachama, about the case where the blood landed on the beged and became Tomei at that moment. There isn't really, because again, there you have Hazar Tzrichashir, according to Rebbe Lazar, here, the dam, there's no particular shear. So actually, on the face of it, it should come out, based on this whole discussion, it should come out, therefore, in the end, that given we don't pass him like Rebbe Lazar, we pass him like Rebbe Chachamim, then the result should be, in the case of this dam that landed on the beged, that would have a tummy, the result on the face of it should be that you do have to wash it. And yet, the Rambam paskins that you don't, which the Noitza Kalim have a hard time understanding why that is. The text of Mishnah brings from Mari Kurkus that maybe the Rambam understood our sugya differently, or maybe even the Rambam had a different girsa of our Gemara or something. Different Achronim talk about different possibilities, different other possibilities. One of them is the sugya later on at the end of our closer to the end of our perek that bears on this also, a sugya over there involving Dam Ola and Dam Kata, where therefore the Rambam may have understood that the conclusion of that sugya overrides this one. A few other explanations among Achronim about why the Rambam paskins as he does.
You would have to wash it because what?
The Rambam paskins in this particular case, where it landed on a beged tomei, the Rambam paskins, you don't have to wash it.
Right, but the Chachamim would say you do.
So that's the thing. That's the hard thing. It seems from what we just concluded in the sugya that the Chachamim should say that you do have to wash it. So that's the why the Rambam
Right. That I understand.
So why does the Rambam paskin otherwise? So that's what I'm saying. You have a discussion. Maybe the Rambam had a different girsa, or maybe the Rambam holds that a different sugya later on overrides this one. Like I said, there's a few different explanations.
But the Chachamim say that you would have to wash it because what? Because it becomes
tamei? On the face of it, the Chachamim should be saying in our case that you have to wash it because the same way as they say over there that the part of abdomen water is still effective, the same way they should hold over here, the dam is still effective.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that the Rambam paskins otherwise leads to a lot of discussion. All right. Let's go on. The Mishnah said chatas psula chula. We said in the Mishnah that if a chatas was posul, and we said, regardless whether it became posul, regardless whether it had a shata kosher, whether there was ever a period of time that it was kosher, or regardless whether it didn't have a shata kosher, either way, the Mishnah had said, if the blood of this chatas posul lands on clothing, then you don't have to wash it. Now we're going to learn that not everybody agrees with that. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa. The pasuk says midamo. The pasuk says if some of its blood lands on clothing, the midamo, its blood is a mute, meaning midam shade of a midam stola. Only if it was blood from a kosher carbon, not if it was from a pasul carbon. Rabbi Akiva says no. What we learn is hoysala shata kosher v'nitzala. If the carbon, or if the blood rather, had a period of time when it was kosher, when it could have been sprinkled on the mizbeach, and later on it became posul, let's say, for example, one of the examples in the Mishnah was if the blood was left overnight, or became tamei, or what have you, then domatone kibur, then Rabbi Akiva says the blood then does have to be washed in Nazara. On the other hand, if it never had a shaka kosher, if let's say, for example, one of the scenarios in our Mishnah is where it was shechted with a thought of chutzlus manu, chutzlus makoma, where then it became piggle right away, and there was piggle or tossel right away, and therefore the blood never had a chance to be sprinkled on the mizbeach, then Rabbi Akiva would say, then the ein gamo tohu kibbutz, the blood doesn't have to be washed in the azara. Rav Shimon says no. Either way, it doesn't require kibbutz, which is what we said in our Mishnah. So our Mishnah, our Stam Mishnah, was like Rav Shimon. So the question is, my time is Rav Shimon. So what's Rav Shimon's reason? Rav Akiva, we understand. You have one mute. So therefore, Rav Akiva says, you have one mute from the word midamma. So therefore, you can't be mamayit from all the psulim. You can only be mamayit from one type of tossel of carbon. What about Rav Shimon? Why is Rav Shimon saying that you can be mamayit both kinds? The reason is because you have two mutes, ksiv oisa or ksiv midamma. Because you have two mutes. And the pasuk says, hakoyen hamachate oisa yechlana. Actually, there's a couple of psukim later, it says, kol zacha v'koyenim yechal oisa, any male koyen can eat it. So the it is a miut, meaning only a certain type of carbon, and the midamma is also a miut, it's blood. Therefore, Rav Shimon says, you have two miutim. Chav l'hecha d'hoisa l'shata kosher. So therefore, one of them teaches us that, so one of them teaches us where it didn't have a shata kosher, that you have to wash it, and the other one teaches us where it did have a shata kosher, that you also don't have to wash it. So if you have two meals in, so therefore you can exclude both things.
Rav Shimon says either way,
shata kosher or no shata kosher, either way you do not have to do kibbutz.
Because there's two miyotin, exactly. So one is the word oisa,
and the other one is the hay of the word midama. So what would Rabbi Akiva answer to that? What does he do with the word oisa? He would answer oisa tzachis truma. He would say the word oisa comes to teach us that this concept of that he would say like this. We learned before, and we're going to learn later on the perek, that there are two dinim that are mentioned in these psukim that we're dealing with perek. One of them is this din of dam chatos that we've been dealing with. The other one is the din of meriko, shifa, and shvira. Actually, there are three dinim, I guess. There's the dam chatos, the business about washing it in the azara. There's a kli cheres that was used for cooking a chatos, where we're saying you have to break the kli cheres. Because the flavor in it is nicer, so you have to break it. And another din that if it was a metal keli that you have to cleanse it. Riko shifa. So now Rabbi Akiva is saying that the word oisa comes to teach us that the concept of riko shifa does not, it only applies to a keli that you use for cooking korban. Rabbi Akiva would say the word oisa teaches us the same rule does not apply to truma. If you have a keli that you use to cook truma, Rabbi Akiva would say it does not require miriko shtifa.
Uh-huh. Oh,
therefore, only korbanos. So therefore, he says that's what you need the word oisa for to be my tshurim. There, Rabbi Shimon Latano. Look at that. Rabbi Shimon says I don't need that. If he goes according to his shita, drama kodshim kalim ain't tunin miriko. Rabbi Shimon says you, Rabbi Akiva, are saying that this concept of miriko shtifa applies to all korbanos. Me, I hold that it doesn't even apply to other korbanos. It only applies to kodshim kalim. Even kodshim kalim don't require miriko shtifa. V'choshkin truma, how much more so truma shouldn't require it, because truma is even more lenient than kodshim, because it doesn't have the dinim of noiser, and you don't have to eat it in any particular place, etc. So therefore, sort of Shimon is going to say, therefore, I don't need the word oisa to tell me that it doesn't, that miriko shtifa doesn't apply to a keli used for truma, because that's obvious. There's a kal v'chomer. If it doesn't apply to kodshim kalim, it surely doesn't apply to truma. So what am I using? So now I have the word oisa available to teach me that there's a second kind of potul chatos, namely oisa l'shata kosher, that doesn't require kibbutz.
Truma is considered more machmir than the kodshim kalim.
No, truma is less chomer than kodshim kalim. Well, I guess in a way yes, in a way not. I mean, kodshim kalim can be eaten by anybody. Truma can only be eaten by kohenim. Fine, but still, Rav Shimon is going to say, if you see that the whole concept of Merikah Shiva only applies to Kodshei Kodshim, there's no reason to think that it should apply to Truma. Because Kodshei Kodshim, in that sense, Kodshei Kodshim are, and you see, even among Kodshim Kalim, it doesn't apply to the parts of the Kodshim Kalim that can only be eaten by Kodshim. Which those are, and we find, I mean, there's other areas of Halacha where we find that Kodshim are more stringent than Truma. For example, way back when, we learned in Yevamos about you have a case of a woman who's a Bas Koyan who married a Yisrael, and now she's widowed or divorced and has no children, where she's able to eat Truma again. She's able to eat Truma in her father's house, but she's never allowed to eat again Chaz of the Shoik. She's never allowed to eat the parts of the Kodshim Kalim that go to the Koyanim. So we see that even... Well, the point is, I'm saying that we see from that Truma is less stringent than Kodshim Kalim. So therefore, Rav Shimon is going to say, if the concept of Merikah Shiva doesn't even apply to Kodshim Kalim, it surely doesn't apply to Truma. I don't need a prophet to teach me that. Therefore, I have the word Oysa available to teach us another means. Whereas Rav Akiva, who holds that Merikah Shiva applies to all Kodshim, he's going to need a prophet to tell us, but it doesn't apply to Truma.
Okay.
Next Mishnah says, Nitis minatsavar ala beged, if the blood squirted from the neck of the animal directly onto the beged, ain a tone tip, or then it doesn't have to be washed in the azara, because, well, basically, I mean, we're going to say in the Gemara, but basically the idea is if it's squirted directly from the neck, we established earlier in the Masech that if it squirts directly from the neck onto the floor, then you can't use it for zrika. But basically, that's what it boils down to over here. This blood is possible for zrika, therefore it doesn't require kibbutz, because that's a general rule. We established at the beginning of the parak is that only blood that's fit for zrika is blood that requires kibbutz. Similarly, if blood splashes from the corner of the mizbeach, so you applied the blood to the corner of the mizbeach with the finger with the chatas by splashing it with most of the other korbanos, whatever, and then some of it splashed onto clothing from there, or mina yisoid, or if it splashed off the yisoid, also ain't a tone kibbutz, and also it doesn't require kibbutz because the mitzvah has already been done with it. It's already, Rashi explains, because the pasuk says, and we'll see in the Gemara actually that the prophet says that it will sprinkle, implying that it has to be blood that's yet to be sprinkled. And in this case, it was already sprinkled, it was already applied to the Mizbeach, it was already applied to the Keren, it was already applied to the Yisod. Actually, Rashi brings from earlier in the Masechta, we had a sugya on the subject where we explained over there, the Gemara explained over there, that when we say that it splashed min ha-yisoid, we don't mean literally from the yisoid, because obviously then the Mishnah wouldn't even need to tell us. If even it splashed from the keren, it doesn't need kibbutz, how much more so from the yisoid, where all you pull on the yisoid is the shirai. So we said over there that what it meant, min ha-yisoid, means blood that's going to be poured on the yisoid, meaning the shirayim that are still in the kevi, that are still in the mizra. So if you take the mizrach, so in other words, the Kohen takes the mizrach and takes it over to the Zeach and applies the blood to the Keren, we're saying once he applied that blood to the blood that's on the Keren itself, as well as the rest of the blood that's in the mizrach, which is going to be poured on the Yisoid, neither of those is Tohen Kibbutz. The one because it's already been applied to the Mizrach, and the other one because it's not going to be used for Hazar anymore, because at this point it's only Shirayim. And Shirayim, you can't do Hazar with Shirayim. Okay. Another din, nishpach al rispa v'asoi, if the blood spilled onto the floor, and he collected from the neck, also in tone kibbutz, and also it doesn't require kibbutz. Same idea, because as we learned earlier, such blood is possible for hazar, because it has to have been collected in a kevi first. The rule is, ain tone kibbutz el adamshin eskabo b'kli v'roi lahazoya. The rule is, the blood requires kibbutz only if it was first received in a keli, like it's supposed to be, v'roi la'hazoya, and is suitable for hazoya. Now the Gemara is going to ask what that last line is adding. It seems to be restating what we just said in the previous line, so we'll see. So the Gemara starts off. Tanan Abanan, we learn in a Braisa, Yachol nikas min asavra ala beged yehei tohen kibbutz. You would think that if the blood squirted from the neck directly onto clothing, it should require kibbutz. No, Talmud Lomar. Therefore, the pasuk says Asher Yizeh. Therefore, the pasuk says that it will splash in the future tense. It doesn't say Asher Yizeh Midama or something like Asher Yizeh or whatever, which would be past tense. Instead, it says Asher Yizeh Midama Ala Beged, that it will squirt or it will splash on clothing. So that word Asher Yizeh means Loya Marti Lacha Ela Beroy LaHazoya. That means it only applies to blood that's yet to be splashed, that's yet to be applied to the mizbeach, as opposed to here where it came directly out of the neck, and therefore, as we said before, it's possible lahazar. Tanya Yidach, we learn in another braisa. Similarly, Yachol Nitzas Min HaKeren Min HaYitzar Yehei Tohen Kibbutz. You would think that if it's splashed from the keren of the mizbeach or from the yisod, or as Rashi has said, from the Mizrach that's going to be forward on the Yisod, you would think Yehei Tohen Kibbutz, you would think it needs Kibbutz. No, Talmud Lomar, Asher Yizeh, again, you have the same thing. The pasuk says that it will be sprinkled, Prapozeshek Bahuza, as opposed to in this case, where it was already sprinkled on the Mizeach, then therefore, so in other words, from Asher Yizeh, we're learning two things, effectively. Number one, that it has to be blood that is able to be sprinkled on the Mizeach, and number two, that it isn't blood that's already been sprinkled on the Mizeach. Then the Mishnah continues, Nishpach ala ritz b'chola. We said poured out of the neck onto, spilled out of the neck onto the chaya, and collected it. We said it's possible for hazar. And the Mishnah had finished off, the rule is that only if blood was received in a keli and it's really for hazar. So the question is, Hatul Amali. Well, what is the Mishnah adding with that line? That's restating what we just said, that if it's spilled from the neck onto the floor. The answer is not teaching us a new din. Matam Kamar. The Mishnah is just telling us the reason behind the din it just said. Matam Nishbachalarispa Osba in Tone Kibbutz. Why is it that if the blood spills directly onto the floor from the neck of the behemoth, then you collected it, then it doesn't require kibbutz. If it landed on clothing, we'll see because for entron kibbutz it will damage the scalp of a fever or lazoya. Because in order for it to require kibbutz, it has to have been collected in a keli and it has to be suitable for lazoya.
Is it like this?
The Mishnah is clarifying why that rule applies. We learned in the Braise the source for it in the pasuk because it says Asher Yizeh. But the Mishnah doesn't usually give us the derivation of dinim from the pasuk. Most of the time, it just tells us the dinim and leaves the derivation from the psukim to braisas. But in this case, the Mishnah is not giving us the derivation from the pasuk. The Mishnah is giving us the reasoning behind the din that it just said. Okay. Then we said roi lahazoya. We said that the blood has to have been collected in a keli. Fine, that we understand easily enough. But we also said that it has to be roi lahazar. It has to be suitable. So lamot urtimai. So what does that come to? What does that come to exclude? What?
Suitable for sprinkling.
Suitable for sprinkling. So the question is lamot urtimai. What is that? What are those words roi lahazoya coming to exclude? Where do you have a case of blood that was collected in a keli but is not roi lahazoya? The answer is lamaoti kibol pachas mikdei hazar b'klizeh or pachas mikdei hazoya b'klizeh. It comes to exclude a case like this. Let's say now we talked about earlier in the sechta. It could happen that when you're doing kabbalah hadam for a korban, it could happen that you collect the blood in two or more different keli. We've talked about that before. So fine, you're able to collect it in two different kalim, but in this case, we're talking about, suppose you collected less than the necessary amount for hazoya in one kalim, and less than the proper amount for hazoya in another kalim, and now later on you combine them. So now, what we're saying is, because each kalim to begin with only had too little blood in it, not enough for kadeh hazoya, and we're going to see soon what kadeh hazoya is, then therefore, even though later on the two amounts will combine together, and now you have enough for Hazoya, nevertheless, that blood is not Roy LaHazoya. It's not suitable to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach, because the Kabbalah wasn't done properly. You had to be Makabel to begin with enough blood for Hazoya. Therefore, that blood is not, even though it was collected in a keli, that blood is not Roy LaHazoya. Therefore, no kibbutz. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rav Chalafter Bar Shaul Omer, Kiddush Pachas Mekidei Hazoya, in a similar vein, we're going to draw an analogy between blood of Korbanos and Parah Adruma water. So we see Rav Chalafter Bar Shaul says in a Braisa, Kiddush Pachas Mekidei Hazoya Beklizeh, if you do Kiddush, which is, you take Mayim Chayim, you take water from a spring, you sprinkle some of the ashes of the Parah Adruma on that water, and that's called Kiddush. That now turns that water from plain water into Parah Adruma water, which has the ability to be Mekaher Atomim Es. So that process is called Kiddush. So the Chalafta Bar Shaul would say, if you did Kiddush of less than the amount of Hazoya in one keli, or Pachas Mekadeh Hazoya, the Klizeh, and in another keli also less than the amount of Hazoya, then even if you mix them afterwards by Kiddush, then it's not a valid Kiddush. So by analogy, by the same thing, when it comes to Parah Adruma water, the amount is you need enough Kadeh Hazoya, which we're going to say soon, is that there needs to be enough water in the keli that you can dip in the Ezoy, to be able to, and the tip of the Ezoy will get wet so that you can sprinkle with it. Similarly with blood of a korban, you need a minimum amount in the keli, as we're going to say, in order to be able to dip your finger in. So therefore, the din works the same by both of them, where there needs to be the amount kedei hazoya in the keli to begin with, not that you have less than kedei hazoya in one and less than kedei hazoya in the other, and then combine. So the question is, therefore, Iboyelahu, the dam mabul. Okay, but what would be the din in this regard? So you're talking about as far as the din of kibbutz. What about as far as the din of, that we say, by Chatoris HaPnimius, you have to have taken a mizrach of blood, and the Kohen Gadol does, and the Kohen Gadol does the various sprinkles over there in the Kodesh HaKadoshim for on Yom Kippur, and in the Kodesh and in the Kodesh and on the Mizbeach HaZahav for all of them. So would this din about that you need Kedei Hazoya apply to that case also? And by the way, within the question of the Gemara over here, there's a discussion among Rishonim. Does it mean that you need enough in there for one Hazoya? Or does it mean that you need enough in there for all the hazoyas? In other words, when it comes to the korbanos of Yom Kippur, for example, so you have 8 hazoyas from the Dam HaPar in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, another 8 in front of the Heichel, another 4 on the 4 corners of the Mizbeach HaZahav, and then another 7 on the top of it. So do we mean that to begin with you need to have enough blood in the keli for all of those hazoyas? Or do we mean that it's enough that you have in there, that's enough in there, you have enough for one Hazoya, and then you would go and then you'd go and be Makabel more and continue from there? Anyway, so the question is, does that concept even apply to Chataris HaPnimius, or is it okay for Makabel to begin with less than Kedei Hazoya? So the question is like this, Hilchasihi, do we say that this concept of that by Mechap, that you have to have enough for Hazoya, do we say that concept by Mechap, by Parah Adruma water itself, is Halacha? Do we say, that it's a Halacha L'moshe Mishinai, and Umehilchas L'Gamrinan, and we have a general rule that when it comes to Halacha L'moshe Mishinai, we can't derive one thing from another. So maybe we would, in other words, we would say there's a halacha l'moshe Mishinai by Parah Adruma water that you need Kedei Hazoya, but that we can't derive from that the same din would apply to anything else that requires Hazoya. Is that
why?
What?
Why is that? That we cannot
why
derive?
Is that? Because halacha l'moshe Mishinai is something that Hashem told Moshe orally. It's not even something, there's no remnant to it in Torah Shabbat. It's meant, it's a one-off thing, basically. It's not meant to, if it was meant to derive other halachas from it, then in fact it would have been written in Torah Shabbat, or at least it would have been hinted at in Torah Shabbat, and then we would be able to use the usual Yud Gimel Midas Shatzer and Nidreshes ban on it. But the Yerushal Midas and all the other ways of deriving one halacha from the other are not meant to apply to halachas L'moshe Mitzinai. The davka, the fact that Hashem gave it as halacha L'moshe Mitzinai, that without any shirdish, without any root for it in Torah Shabbat, implies that you're not meant to derive anything else from it. So if we say that this concept that you have to have today hazoya by Torah Adram order, if we say that that is a halacha L'moshe Mitzinai, then that's it. It means it applies only to that. So it doesn't apply to that. Oy Dilma, or maybe we learn it from a pasuk. Hossa my time, or maybe the reason why by Torah Adram order you need today hazoya is because the pasuk says the tova b'mayim. The pasuk says that he dips the ezoiv in the water. And Rashi explains that it's a matter of dikduk. When the tova b'mayim, Rashi mentions in a few places in Chumash and in some other places that there's a difference between saying b'mayim versus b'mayim. B'mayim means in water. B'mayim means in the water. In other words, the difference is that when you have b'mayim or other things like that, when you have something that says with a hey how you do with a definite article, it means you're referring to something that was already mentioned before and that you're referring to it now. In this case, the water that was already mentioned that was already dealt with earlier. So in that case, so because it says that. So that means it has to be a minimum amount. It has to be the minimum amount of water. So therefore, in other words, what it means is the tova when it comes to dipping in the ezoiv, there has to be b'mayim. There has to be at least the same amount of water that there was earlier at the earlier stage of kiddush. And therefore, from that we would derive that by kiddush you have to have a minimum amount. So if we say that, then we're learning from a pasuk, hachinamik is the tova b'dam. Well, then, by that logic, when it comes to the dam chatas apinius, the same thing. The pasuk uses the expression, the kohen should dip his finger in the blood, the tova kohen has applied b'dam. So therefore, we would learn the same thing, that the original Kabbalah had to be enough blood, that now, when it comes to the tova, that there should be enough to dip his finger into. So that's the question. Are we learning it that way? Or is the whole thing by Tara Drumra Halachal Mosh Mitzinai? And if it's Halachal Mosh Mitzinai, then we're not learning from it to anything else. So, Toshma, the Amr of Zirka, from what Rabbi Zirka said, Amr of Elazar, Ach Vadam Loi Kiddush. That he says that, yeah, even by blood also, if you don't have enough that was done for Kabbalah in the first place, enough to dip his finger into, then he's not Makadish, meaning in other words that the Kabbalah was possible. So therefore we see that yes, the din does apply to the din does apply to Dam as well. So not just our Mishnah said that said Roy Lazar, and we inferred from that it meant the case of that it meant that you need for Chatoris Chatonius. Now we're saying, Rabbi Lazar is saying that the same thing applies to Chatoris Apinius as well, which obviously means, therefore, it can't be Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, because if it was Halacha L'Moshe Mitzinai, we wouldn't have a way to learn it. So it must be that indeed he's learning from B'tova B'mayim and B'tova B'dam.
Why is that?
Because the fact that Rabbi Lazar is saying it applies to blood means, therefore, that applies to Chatoris Apinius, means it has to be that we learn it from a limud from the pasuk. From the word v'tovol, for tovol b'mayim and v'tovol b'dam. Otherwise we wouldn't have a source for it, because otherwise the only way we know about there having to be a certain amount in the keli to begin with, if we were going to say it's halacha l'moshe Mitzinai, then we can't learn from that to anything else. You wouldn't have a basis for saying that it applies to blood. Okay. So Amar Rava Tanya. So Rava says, yeah, we learn in a braisa. The tava v'loy mesapik, that when the pasuk says the tava akoyin esvoy min adam, when the pasuk says the koyin should dip his finger in the blood, we learn like this. The word the tava means, we have this earlier in the mesapik actually, the tava means v'loy mesapik, means that he has to actually dip his finger in the blood, not that he's just wiping all blood from the sides of the container or the bottom of the container using his finger. There has to be enough, in other words, for him to actually dip his finger and his finger getting wet. Rather than just he wipes his finger along the surface of it and collects blood on it, that wouldn't be enough. And when, that's the meaning of the word Gatovel. And Batom means Achi Hebadam Shir Tvila Mishra. And when the Pasuk says Batom, then he has to dip his finger in the blood. So like we said, the blood means that's the same blood that we were talking about before. Therefore, Achi Hebadam Shir Tvila Mishra. It means that to begin with, at the time of Kabbalah, there had to be enough blood for that purpose to be able to dip his finger in and actually get it wet. So therefore, this that Rav Elazar was saying, you see that it's actually in a braisa. And when it says min hadam, when the pasuk says that he should take from the blood, that he's a min hadam, means min hadam shebe'inyan, means the same blood that was already mentioned in this connection. Meaning in other words, that he has to dip in. In other words, what min hadam teaches us, you can't dip your finger in once and then do a bunch of sprinklings with the blood that's on it. He has to, each time, min hadam, he has to dip in individually into that basin of blood that he has with him.
Every time he wants to sprinkle, he has to
dip his finger in again, right? Right. And the Gemara continues, v'istrich l'michta badam. Now, the Pasuk did have to say, now, the reason why the Pasuk had to say the word badam without, and not just use the word betoval, because the E kosa rachmana betoval, because if you only have the word betoval, fine, you would understand from that when it comes to the dipping, there has to be enough blood in there for him to be able to dip his finger in. But have amina alpha pita like a shear to real amitra. But you would think, okay, so it doesn't matter, even if there was not enough blood from the Kabbalah there to begin with, as long as you fill it up, as long as you do a second Kabbalah, then you mix it in, like you said at the beginning of the sugya, that you have, let's say, two kelim, each one less than a shir hazoya, and then you mix them together. If you only have the word betovel and not the word badam, you wouldn't know that that's possible. Therefore, kasa rahmana badam, therefore the pasuk writes the word badam, implying that it has to be the same blood the same amount that was used at an earlier stage, namely at Kabbalah. So from that we see that the same amount has to be present by Kabbalah and by Tevilah.
How can the same amount be present if some of it was used already?
No, we're talking about the beginning. At the beginning of the Hazar, and that's what I was mentioning before, that you have a machloekas, whether we mean over here there has to be enough at least for one Hazar, and then afterwards, fine, you can go pull more in from another Kaili into another Hazar and so forth. Or do we mean, for example, that there has to be enough in there for all 43 Hazars to begin with? But the point is, in other words, is that the fact that if it only said the Tabal, so you would think, okay, when it comes to the Kabbalah, there can be a tiny amount. Before he gets to the Tevilah, before he gets to dipping in his finger, you have to make sure there's enough in there. So therefore, you would be able to, in principle, collect a drop in one Kaili, a drop in another Kaili, combine them together, and then do the Hazar. No, to tell us that, to tell us not to forestall that, to tell us not like that, the Pasuk uses the word Badam. On the other hand, the Ikos of Rahman of Badam, but if it only said the word Badam, have Aminah, feel a bit spouted. But you would think, okay, so you have to have enough blood in there to be able to dip your finger in, but we would argue, okay, once you have that amount, you don't necessarily have to dip your finger in. It's enough if you just wipe your finger along the side of the keli and collect blood on it that way. Therefore, Kos of Rahman of Batavol, then that's why the Pasuk is Batavol, that you actually have to dip it in. So we need both words. One teaches us the minimum amount you have to have at the time of Kabbalah, and the other one teaches us the actual way that you need to get it onto your finger. Not by wiping it off the sides with your finger, but by actually dipping the finger in. Okay. What about when we said min adam shebe'inyan, right? The question is, when we said that the word min hadam means the same blood that we were just talking about, so what is that coming to exclude? What would we have thought is kosher if we didn't have that word min hadam? That comes to exclude the leftover, as we just said, the leftover blood on the finger. In other words, when he dips his finger in the first time and does the first hazah, the leftover blood on there is possible for the next hazah. He has to get rid of it before he does the next hazah.
He has to
Well, so we'll see now in the Gemara how he does that. And the Gemara says, Messiah of Rav Elazar. In fact, this statement of Rabbah's, and this is this Braisa, supports what Rav Elazar says, the Amr of Elazar, Shirayim, Shabbat, Matzulim, because Rav Elazar said exactly that. The Shirayim that are on the finger are possible to do the next Hazar. So you need an individual dipping man. Okay, so now we're going to get back to the matter of kibbutz, and then from there we're going to see, and then from we're going to get back to the matter of kibbutz, and then we're going to see what happens to how you deal with the shiurei, how you deal with the shirayim that are on the etzbay time, how tacky you get rid of them. So, Amalei Robin Bar Rav Ad L'Rav, so Rav Oven Bar Oga says to Rav, Amar Tamidcha Amar Rav Amram, your Talmud said, or Amri Tamidecha says on the side of it here, your Talmudim said, Amar Rav Amram, in the name of Rav Amram, that Tanina, we learn in a Braisa as follows, which seems, this Braisa that we're going to quote, seems to contradict what Rav Elazar said. Rav Elazar is saying the Shirayim that are on the finger are called Sulchan Hazah. But from the Braisa that we're going to quote now, it seems to imply otherwise. The Braisa says, "Hoya mazeh v'nitzah hazah miyadei." If the person, if the kohen is doing the hazah with the chatoris of pnimius, so he's doing one hazah after another, v'nitzah hazah miyadei, and now you have one particular sprinkling leaves his finger and is on its way to the koronichus, or to the floor, or to the mizbeach, or wherever it's supposed to go. Actually, hizah. So before he did hazah. Tone kibbutz, then that blood, if it lands on clothing, the clothing is going to have to be washed in the hazara. Mishahiza ain't tone kibbutz, but if it's after he did hazara, then it won't require kibbutz. So we have to figure out what it means before he did hazara and after he did hazara, because we're talking about he's in the middle of hazara. My lab hach karma. Now, doesn't it mean, when it's distinguishing between whether he did hazara versus not, on the face of it, the distinction is, actually, gomer milahazos, it means like this. If it's before he finished all the hazaras, and then that blood landed on clothing, toe, and kibbutz. Then that blood would require kibbutz. So even if we're talking about, in other words, so what happens? So he dipped in his finger, he did one hazah, then you had, before he did the next hazah, some of the leftover blood on his finger landed on clothing, and you're saying it would require kibbutz. Which would mean, and now on the face, you, Rebbe Elazar, are saying that blood is possible for hazah. It's possible for hazah, it shouldn't require kibbutz. And yet we seem to be implying that it does. Mishik Gomala has the same tone kibbutz. The Braisa would be saying, once he finished all 43 hazards, then fine, if some of that blood lands from his finger or from the keli or whatever on clothing, then it doesn't need kibbutz, because we said before that only blood that's yet to have hazard done with it requires kibbutz. But the point is, on the face of it, the Braisa seems to be saying exactly that. That have blood that's left on his finger after one hazard, there's yet to be done another hazah, and we're saying because there's yet to be done hazah, therefore that blood is actually going to require kibbutz. That if it requires kibbutz, that means it can be used for hazah. Not like Rav Elazar said, who that's possible for hazah.
If it requires kibbutz,
automatically that's the meaning that hazah can be done with it.
Can be done with it.
If we said before that if blood requires kibbutz, that implies that it has to be able to be used for hazah. Those two things are interdependent. And only blood that's roi la hazah, we said before, is tohen kibbutz. So you're telling me over here that after he did, let's say, the first sprinkling in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, now he still has blood on his finger. You're telling me on the face of it that if now some of that lands on clothing, you're telling me tohen kibbutz. Why is it tohen kibbutz? Because he hasn't finished all the sprinklings yet, and until he finishes all the sprinkling tone kibbutz. But yet, Rav Elazar, you said that blood that's left on his finger is possible for hazah. So then, from the braisa, it implies that it's kosher for hazah. The answer is no. Tachikama, no. What the braisa can mean is, when it distinguishes between before and after hazah, actually, yotza hazah miyado tone kibbutz, if the blood goes from his finger before it actually, so he dipped in his finger, and then the blood went from his finger onto kalim, onto clothes before he actually did the hazah. Well, then tone kibbutz, then it's tone kibbutz, because that blood could have had hazah done with it. But after it left his finger, then whatever is left on his finger is already shirayim, so therefore ain't tone kibbutz, so therefore it doesn't require kibbutz. So if we understand the braisa that way, then it's no contradiction to Rav Elazar. Okay, for Abaya, but Abaya says I have another contradiction. When it comes to the paradroma, the paradroma is shechted on Harazes in Yerushalayim. part of the procedure is that the kohen who's doing it, usually it's the kohen gadol, has to dip his finger into the blood of the par and of the para and sprinkle it seven times in the direction of the hazel. So the Mishnah says, Gomer Melahazas, after he finished the seven sprinklings, the Kaneach Yodeb is Gufa Shalpara. Then he wipes, what does he do to clean up his hand? He wipes his hand on the body of the para, and then they and then they go set the para on fire and burn it. The point being, Rashi says, because the blood of it also needs to be burnt. The pasuk says, as odor best, sort of as summer, the skin and the flesh and the blood all have to be burnt. So therefore, all the remaining blood has to be burnt. So therefore, whatever blood is left on his hand, he has to wipe off on there before they set it on fire. The point is, gomar ein loy gomar loy. Now, the Mishnah is saying only that when he finishes sprinkling, all seven sprinklings, does he have to wipe his finger on the para. Implying, but between sprinklings, he doesn't have to. Implying that the blood that's left on his finger from the first sprinkling is kosher to use for the second sprinkling and so forth. Not like Rav Elazar said. Amalei, so he answers him, maybe Rav Elazar, or maybe whoever Abaye was talking with earlier in the Sugya. No, what it means is, Gomer Mekaneach Yodeb Gufa Shalpara. No, what it means is like this. When he finishes all seven hazards, yeah, he wipes his hand on the actual para. When he's not finished, between hazards, he does have to wipe his finger, but he doesn't wipe it on the goof of the para. He wipes it on something else. So the question is, what did he wipe it on? So I can understand, once he's finished, he has to wipe his hand on the actual para. The reason is, because he said that the pasuk says the par has to be burnt in front of him, and all of it, including the blood, so therefore there's no choice, he has to wipe the remaining blood onto it, otherwise it's not going to get burnt. What should he be wiping his finger on? Now, you just said that he doesn't wipe it on the actual para between sprinklings. Now, okay, there's logic for that, because Rashi says if he wipes it on the para, then he's going to get hair on it, he's going to get dirt on it or whatever, and it wouldn't be proper then that he should use that dirty finger that's now dirty with cow hair and whatever, and use it for the next chazal. So what does he wipe it on? I'm going to buy the fast mizrach. So Abaye says what he does is he wipes it on the edge of the mizrach. You have a mizrach over there to collect the blood. The Rambam actually understands differently. The Rambam understands that he collects the blood of the para in his hand without a tzitzis. So the Rambam would have to understand our Gemara differently. But on the face of it, what we mean is he collects the blood of the para in a mizrach. So therefore, each time he wipes his finger on the mizrach. K'dichtiv k'forei zahav, and we see that because in Sefer Ezra and in Divrei Hayomim, the Mizrakim are called Kfore Zahav, and Kfore is related to the word Tipur, which literally means wiping off. So the Kapara, the literal meaning of the word Kapara is to wipe away, like when Naveda is wiped away. So therefore, so that's what he does in the end. He wipes his finger on the edge of the Mizrak, between one sprinkle and the next, because yes, like Rabbi Elazar said, the leftover blood from one dipping is going to be possible for a different dipping and sprinkling. And then when he's finished all of it, now he doesn't have to use his fingers anymore. So now he can wipe the rest of his hand. Now he can wipe the hand, and now he can wipe his hand on the body of the para, so that bit of blood that's on his hand will end up getting burnt together with the rest of the para. So that's the maskana. Therefore, is that the bottom line? Therefore, is that yes, that in order for dam chatas to be subject to the rules of kibbutz, it has to be roi. It has to be that it wasn't yet used for hazar, and it has to be that it's roi lahazar, which means first of all, as we said in the Mishnah, it has to have been collected in a keli to begin with, and now we're saying also that it means that it can't be blood that was left on his finger after a previous hazar.
It has to be wiped off.
So as far as hazards, right, he has to wipe his finger between one hazar and the next. But what we're saying is also, once he does a hazar, even if it's only the first in a long series of hazards, each time after he dipped in his finger and did a hazar, whatever blood is left on his finger, the rule of kibbutz wouldn't apply to him. Because it's possible for hazar, because he has to wipe it off before he dips in his finger for the next hazar, therefore, you have a kula with that blood that if it lands on clothing from his finger, then it won't require kibbutz.
Not Rory, in other words,
exactly right. Okay. So that's that. So if all's well, I'll be back in person tomorrow, Beis Hashem. If not, I'll also do it on the phone again.
Okay. Where are you now?
I'm in New Jersey.
Okay. Okay. So you'll come back tomorrow, probably?
That's the same, but if I see that I'm not going to be able to make it, then again, I'll let you know, and then you'll dial in.
Thank you very much, Alexander.
Okay.
Take your time.
Nice. Yeah.